Turning Point Coaching and Consulting presents Kairos Conversations, Connecting with Quality, the podcast. Kairos is Greek for the right time, the right season, the right opportunity. This podcast features healthcare quality professionals who share their journeys, their advice, their struggles, how they made that transition into a new and exciting role. My heart's desire is that you find this podcast to be inspirational to you as you make your own journey. Don't forget to share this podcast with your colleagues and friends and rate us on whichever podcast platform you listen to. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for tuning in today. Today, I am joined by my next guest, Kirby Williams. Thank you so much for being here, Kirby.
Thank you, Brandy, for having me. I'm really excited for this conversation.
Awesome. So let's start by introducing yourself to the audience.
Great. So I am Kirby Williams, and I wear quite a few hats. I am a mom, a wife, a sister. I also have been a psychiatric nurse practitioner for the last 12 years, and I own my own clinical practice, which I do about one day a week in the state of Virginia where I reside. And then I also have a psychiatric nurse practitioner education and professional development company called the PMH&P Source, where the focus there is to empower, support, and guide psychiatric nurse practitioners in their career journey. And it's really focused on helping those who are just getting started. So those who have about 0 to 2 years experience and looking for a little bit more support, maybe that they couldn't find in their job or, you know, in the area where they live.
That's so awesome. I want to dive into that even deeper, but I want to go back and just something that you said just really stood out to me, Kirby. And I just loved how you started your introduction, not with your identity as a professional, but who you are as a human. Mm-hmm. Because so many times we do get lost in our professional degrees and our licenses, I mean, self-included. And I just love that you started with who you are, you know, as a mom and a wife and a sister and all of that stuff.
Yeah. No, I've been working on that, I will say. So it's not like, oh, all my life I've been doing that. But I would say in the last 2 years, I've really tried to, when people like ask me, even in person or on podcasts, I try to lead with that. I try to. Sometimes I've said, you know, my professional career, but I've tried to lead with that a little bit more because really, when it comes to what I do, mom does take the most time. So that's what I do the most.
Absolutely. So how did you make that switch internally to kind of separate who you are as a professional from who you are as a human?
Yeah, I think internally, I started to think about and just reflect on, and it was mostly during like the height of the pandemic when maybe we all had more time to reflect on, you know, who we are. But I really took some time to reflect on, you know, when people ask me about, you know, myself, I always lead with professional career, being in nursing, things such as that. And I said, wow, you know, that is what I do. And I do love it. And I do have enjoyment for it. But who I am is so it's different than that, you know, not necessarily completely different, but it's different than that, or it's more than that. And I used to see something, I still see it from time to time on social media, but people were writing like human first, nurse second. So I follow a lot of other nurses and I really like started to resonate with that. And I started to say, that's so true. We are, you know, humans first and foremost, and whatever that might include in your, you know, specific life. And then we then are the thing that we maybe do for finances or financial stability as well. So I just try to take it in, learn from a lot of other people who started to kind of mention that as well. And then I just started to say like, okay, when people ask me that, I'm going to just start saying this. I'm going to start saying mom, you know, mom, sister, wife, those things first.
I love that. Okay. So let's talk about how you got into healthcare and your journey to become a nurse practitioner. What did that look like?
Yeah. So since the age of 5, I've always wanted to be a nurse. I really have. And that came from when I was younger. I had asthma and allergies really badly. So I was in, luckily not in the hospital, I should say, but I was in a doctor's office or medical facility quite often. And so with that, I just got to know the nurses who worked in these places very well and became almost, sounds cliche, but like family, you know, they just really were very kind and always just, you know, I never felt like I was going to the doctor's office, because you think about doctor's offices as a kid, you think of like, getting shots, you know, all kinds of stuff you didn't want to do, nothing really fun. But I remember going to the doctor's office and always been like, it's not going to be that bad. You know, I don't remember their names, but like, oh, this person's going to be there. And she's always very kind and nice and makes me feel comfortable. And even though the doctor was there as well, that's the person who I really got to know and was so personable. So always wanted to be a nurse. I knew that since I was five. You know, when I planned on going to college, it was nursing. It wasn't anything else. It wasn't anything else like, oh, maybe secondary, I'll do this. No, it was nursing. That's what I want to do. And so when I went to college, I made sure that I chose a program that had a direct entry into the nursing program, because there are some colleges where you have to do like a health professional degree first for like a year, and then you apply to their nursing program. I was like, I don't want to do that. Because I want to, I know what I want to do. I'm going to go and I'm going to do it. And so I did that, finished my bachelor's. And that was when I was in St. Louis, Missouri. And then I was like, okay, well, you know, got to nursing. And I was like, I'm so excited for this. And I started working, and it was really amazing. It was a great job. I loved everything about it, to be honest. I still love everything about nursing. And then I was realizing, like, you know, there's a gap that I started to see with the patients I treated. And I was working at a trauma center at the time. And the gap was in like the pieces of care when it comes to their mental health. So at this time I had moved, I was in Phoenix, Arizona. And so the persons that I treated at this trauma hospital were usually young adults who were in like car and motorcycle accidents. Like that was like majority of the clients that I treated. And with those accidents, there were some very large losses, whether a loss of limb, a loss of a person who was in the car with them, those types of things. And so I remember like, okay, we're helping them walk again. We're helping them feel better from pain, helping them get used to their prosthetic, which is good. Those are all great things. But I was like, man, we really haven't taken into account the other pieces of things, because these persons were like 20 to 30 years old. And one guy in particular, I can still see his face, even though I do not know his name. He was a basketball player. He's a basketball star. He was 20, 22-ish, maybe. I think he was playing college ball, and he had a car accident and lost his leg. And that, yeah, that changed the trajectory of his life. And even though, of course, I didn't know him after he left the hospital, but I knew like that changes the trajectory of someone's life. And then, you know, but then I was like, well, what are we doing, you know, besides, again, helping him mobilize again, helping him get used to his prosthetic, making sure his pain's under control, those types of things, which we did, and we did very well. But like, there's something missing, because he is leaving here and has a whole, like I said, new trajectory on his life that he did not expect to happen. And his whole life was focused around basketball. And now that some, you know, things are going to shift. And I just felt like, gosh, I wish I could do more on that side, because I know that mindset shift had to be great, though I have not experienced it myself. I can only imagine that being such a great shift that he had to go through. And that's when I started thinking about, you know, mental health and, you know, what parts of the healthcare system could I still be a part of that would focus more on those types of things, you know, after a major accident or just after a change in your life, really focusing on a person's mental health, a person's kind of transition in their life and what they do after such major transitions in their life. And I realized that there was a psych mental health nurse practitioner program. And I said, oh, that might be something that I, you know, would be interested in, learned a little bit more about it. I actually met with a psych nurse practitioner when I was living in Arizona at the time. And, you know, she was, you know, telling me about what she did and how she enjoyed it and what she really felt that she got to do in that role. And so I said, you know, that's something I'm going to go, you know, pursue. And then I came to the East Coast and got my degree in Virginia, got my master's degree.
So I know there's a huge stigma around psychiatry in general.
Yeah.
and, you know, maybe a lack of knowledge about what it is and how psychiatric practitioners can help. Can you go into that a little bit more on what maybe a session looks like or what someone would expect if they work with someone who has a psychiatry background?
Yeah. I mean, I definitely think it can look, you know, a little bit different, but overall, especially if you are going into a first session with someone who is a psychiatric provider, so that might be a psychiatric nurse practitioner. There are some PAs or physician associates that have a psychiatry qualification or a psychiatrist. And so if you're going into that appointment, that first appointment, what you could expect is that we're going to ask you a lot of questions, but we want to ask you a lot of questions for a good reason. We really want to do our best to do a comprehensive evaluation of what's been going on recently. So we don't just want to ask you about your symptoms. We want to, you know, ask you about your symptoms, of course, but then we want to ask you about, have there been stressors? Have there been changes? You know, what's your support system look like? What's your work day look like? Do you enjoy the work that you do? Would you rather be doing something else? What's your free time look like? We want to ask about those things because it really gives us a fuller picture. Again, never a perfect picture, because I always tell patients that I work with, you know, I'm just meeting with you for the first time for about an hour. And so I know that doesn't mean I know everything about you, but to the best of our ability, we try to get a very, you know, full picture there. And then after asking quite a few questions about your life and about the symptoms you've been experiencing, we do spend some time talking about different kinds of options for what might be going on. So sometimes those options look like, we might talk to you about therapy. We might talk to you about, you know, changing some things in your life. So some lifestyle modifications may be something that could be beneficial for the person. We may talk to you about engaging in like support groups or different kind of ways you could build your support system. And in some cases, we will also may talk about medication. And that doesn't always mean we prescribe medication. What I like to do and how I go into that conversation about medications as I like to educate on it and tell people about like, okay, what could you expect? I also like to have what I call those real conversations about medication, meaning I like to spend time talking about what medications can do and what they cannot do, because there are some differences there in what they can and cannot do. And, you know, depending where people, when they meet with me, may have received information from, whether that's from the media, TikTok, you know, social media, things like that. I want to make sure that I'm very clear on, you know, on those things.
Do you feel like there's any challenges with access to that kind of service, to psychiatric services?
That's a really good question. I would say that prior to the pandemic, there were more challenges to access, because before the pandemic, telehealth was not a regular thing that was going on. It was not approved by a lot of insurance companies. And if it was approved, it had to be like really, really super specific. So a lot of people didn't have that super specific, maybe certification to do that. And so since the pandemic, because of telehealth, I think that has really expanded access in a good way. And so I think that the accessibility now has increased because of telehealth. I think that there's still issues with access because of not every provider might take health insurance, and then every provider doesn't take every health insurance. In some cases, like I think about myself, I take about 5 insurances, but there's maybe about, let's say 12 in Virginia. It's probably more than that, but I'm just throwing a number out there. You know, so I know that can limit access if a lot of people don't take the insurance that the person has. Access can also be a little bit difficult because I do know a lot of places are, I would say, full or fuller, so that sometimes, you know, let's say I knew someone who was making a call to get psychiatric services because they were like, okay, I'm ready to do it, you know, right now. And they call a couple places, and what ends up happening in some cases, and this still does happen even with telehealth, is that everybody is pretty booked up for maybe the next, let's just say 4 to 6 weeks or something like that. And so then the person either, you know, they might make the appointment, but then they'll talk themselves out of it and cancel it later. Or they might be like, well, never mind, because I don't want to wait 4 to 6 weeks or something such as that. So I know there's still some issues with access in from those angles.
Yeah, because I would imagine that there's not that many psychiatric practitioners to choose from.
Right. If you look at it, you know, comparing it to like medical professionals, there is definitely less of us. And then when it comes to, and I can only speak, I'll say this for psychiatric nurse practitioners specifically, when it comes to psychiatric nurse practitioners, usually we would be caring for less patients, because what we do try to do, most of us, or a lot of us, I should say, is that we're doing some type of some type of therapy and other things in our appointments besides a focus on medication. And so that means that our appointments are longer. So maybe they might be 30 minutes. I see some patients and my appointments with them are about 45 minutes, because we do talk about medication, but then we talk about, you know, let's focus on like the negative thoughts you've been having about yourself, or it's the negative thoughts you've been having about the world or in general, things like that. And so we spend some time talking about that and diving deep into that. And so with that, that means that, you know, I could only carry, let's just say, 200 patients, which sounds like a lot, but there's a lot of patients around, but 200 patients, whereas maybe a medical provider or primary care provider, they could carry 400, 500 patients, because their appointments are much shorter than mine. So sometimes that ends up being the case where we're there, but our appointments are a little bit longer. We're doing a little bit, maybe a little bit more or different kind of care in the appointment that's just being focused on medication, that then we stay full for that reason.
I want to pause for a moment to share something with you, my friend. After landing several non-clinical roles and coaching others to do the same, I have found that if you're running into roadblocks, making that pivot out of direct patient care, it's because of one of three reasons. One, you haven't quite figured out what you want to do yet, and that's okay. But take the time to dive deep to figure that out. Number two, your resume screams clinician. And number three, you haven't demonstrated value and impact in your current role. Regardless of which reason resonates most deeply with you, I'll share some resources to help in the show notes section of this podcast.
So what advice would you give someone who wanted to take a similar path career-wise and go into a psychiatric nurse practitioner role?
Yeah. So, you know, what I would advise for that person, you know, I would tell them to take, you know, some opportunities, if they can, to meet with a psychiatric nurse practitioner or speak with one, even if they can't meet with the person in person, you know, speak with them, ask them a couple of questions about their career. And if they're able, ask a little bit more than one of them, because, you know, we all going to kind of work a little bit differently. So I do think having a couple of different perspectives could be helpful. And, you know, with that, that'll give them a better idea of like what's happening really in that role, and what it could look like and what it might look like for them in the future. And if they feel like, okay, this is where I really, you know, I do feel like that's where I want to be. I feel like that's really what I want to do. And if they really feel that way, then that is when they would, you know, make the plan to apply to a master's program that has that psychiatric nurse practitioner certification. And I would say that if they're, you know, about to start school or just started school, this is really the time to make sure that they're engaging in the mental health community in their, you know, in their geographic location, if they already haven't, because networking has been really, really powerful in making sure that they're that they know about opportunities for jobs, know about opportunities for like internships and other things. And so if you're starting the program, you want to look at, okay, how can I get myself involved in some of the, you know, mental health advocacy programs in my area? Two big advocacy groups that have like state chapters are NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, and then also Mental Health of America. Those are two big advocacy groups where, you know, people could even volunteer, get to know other people, learn about resources, things like that, that are going to be helpful for, you know, transitioning into your career.
So is that what you do in your business, the PMP Source? PMHNP source?
Yes, the PMHNP source. So with that business, that is where I provide mentorship, guidance, and empowerment to psychiatric nurse practitioners with 0 to 2 years experience. So that's where I help those newer nurse practitioners kind of learn the lay of the land. We do continued education. We do mentor sessions where we talk about, okay, what's been maybe a pain point in your career so far? What are some questions you have? And I just provide a safe space to kind of ask those questions, to troubleshoot some things that have come up in their career or with patients as well, and going from there. So we do a lot of that kind of work there. And then we talk about, you know, if you're looking at growing your professional career or growing into your role, but making sure you have a lot of opportunities out there for yourself, we do talk about, okay, these are some of the things you want to make sure you engage in, you know, these mental health advocacy organizations, for example.
So how do these nurse practitioners who are new to the field find you?
So I am on Instagram almost daily. That's one place that people can find me. And my handle there is at your PMHNP mentor. And then I'm also on LinkedIn as well, where I post different types of guidances and tips for psychiatric nurse practitioners. So you can find me under my name, Kirby Williams. And, you know, I'm always sharing things there so people can get an idea of, you know, what types of things I share, what types of education I provide just by following me there. Because I would say that everything I post on LinkedIn, it's usually a kind of a gem or a practical tip of some sort.
Okay. So switching gears a little bit, you talked about your journey, how you wanted to be a nurse since you were 5 years old. And, you know, you really had a nurse that stood out to you when you were young and when you were going through your own health challenges. And you saw that there was a gap for, you know, people who experienced trauma or people who had a certain life event, mm-hmm. that they didn't have this mental health support.
Yeah.
What was your defining point in all of that?
Yeah. I would say when I look at the defining point for making the decision to become a psychiatric nurse practitioner, I really think it was caring for that young man I talked about earlier, the basketball star, and realizing like this is a huge gap. And, you know, knowing he was going through such a hard change, and he was, I would say he was someone who was very verbal about the changes he was going through and how distressed, which any of us would be about these changes. He was very verbal about it, you know, to us, not in a mean way, but just like expressing the loss of his goals that he had for himself, for example. So he was very verbal about that. And, taking time to, even though it's a busy floor, like any other floor these days, but I remember myself just taking time to, you know, listen and say, you know, I don't understand what you're going through, but I, you know, really am here to listen. And if there are things that can be helpful, I would, you know, like to provide it if I can, but I know right now that I can listen. And so just even being able to provide that, hold that space for him, so to speak, I thought that was like, wow, you know, can I do that in my career? Like, can my career be focused on holding the space for people during very difficult times of their life? And that was, you know, that's kind of saying it more generally, but that's where that turning moment or that defining point happened of like, is there a space where I could do that with my career and still be a nurse? Cause I really, you know, if I wanted to be a nurse since I was five, I was like, but I still want to be a nurse. I still wanted to be a nurse though.
Now, I love that you said that though, because I think we as healthcare providers spend a lot of times fixing the problem that we can see, right? The physical problem, mm-hmm. the limb that was injured, their vital signs and lab values and getting that back into, you know, alignment. But we don't often address the mental health of a person, mm-hmm. you know, as a whole, as a whole being. And until recently, with the pandemic, it wasn't even talked about that much.
Right.
Agree. It was kind of this thing that happened behind the scenes and you don't really say anything about it. And so I'm glad that now is more talked about and people can feel safe, mm-hmm. you know, sharing their struggles and things like that. So what do you think will help make healthcare safer for our patients and address them as a human and also more sustainable for our colleagues? Because like you said, it's a busy floor and, you know, you want to address these other issues, but you only have so much time in a day and you're also treating other patients.
Right. Yes. Multiple patients, you know, and depending how, you know, how you work, multiple patients, multiple times, you know, during the week. So that is quite a challenge. So when thinking about making it safer for patients and in a way that is sustainable as well, and making sure they feel, you know, seen and heard. And recently I had a post on LinkedIn, and it wasn't quite about this, but I think it really speaks to helping a person be seen and heard when you are very short on time. Because that happens. It happens to me, and I have my own practice, which people are like, you control your own time, right? To a point. So what I found to be helpful in that is being honest and upfront with patients about your limited time, or about like, okay, you just say you had 30 minutes with someone and you're realizing, you know, now we only got about 5 minutes left and we haven't quite, you know, gotten to the meat. we haven't quite gotten to something. So there are a couple of, you know, things I try to say to a patient, and it's what I recommend to any of our colleagues as well, is that, you know, Mr. Jones, random name, Mr. Jones, I really want to hear, you know, more about, you know, your experience, but, you know, it looks like we're coming up on just about 5 minutes, you know, 5 minutes left. And I want to make sure that I am here and can be with you to address your priority, you know, concerns that you have for today, or priority concerns if it's outpatient, you know, that you came in with today, and make sure that we get to that. And so I think when you say something around that, can be worded a little different, you know, find the words that really resonate and align with you. But I think when you say that, you make someone feel heard and seen, like, okay, this person does want to hear more about maybe what I'm talking about in this area, but they're also letting me know that we are coming up on the last few minutes of time here, and they really want to make sure that they're getting to those priority issues or most pressing issues that I'm having right now. And so I think that can be helpful in that way. And also what I feel, and I think this could be in a way of safety as well, is really asking the patient, and I've done this before, is to, you know, based on, you know, what you've came in today, can you prioritize which ones are really detrimental to your functioning or distressing to you, from, you know, on a scale of 1 to 3. And that way I can, you know, work it that way too. Because if sleep is their priority, then I want to focus on sleep. You know, if that's like, okay, this is number one, let's focus on this, because you know, the person really feels like this is most distressing to them. They're falling asleep at work, maybe because they haven't slept at night. Maybe they're forgetting things, falling asleep at the wheel, all kinds of things, which do relate to safety. So if I'm prioritizing it as they have prioritized it to me, I think that is so important. And I think that can be so helpful in a way of safety. But really just, you know, trying to say a one-liner to make sure, you know, you've heard the patient, but also being honest and realistic. And I would say 92% of the time, patients are understanding of that, understanding of limited time that we have. And, you know, grateful that we let them know that they're coming up on time, instead of just being like, oh, I got to go now, sir. You know, they're grateful for the warning. They're grateful for that information. So, you know, I've done it quite a few times in quite a few different settings. And I would say, like I said, 92% of the time, they're grateful for that heads up that, you know, because they don't realize it either. They might start talking about things in their life and just be on a roll. So,
I think people in general, we all have a basic human need to be seen, heard, appreciated, and validated.
Yeah.
And, you know, when we give, like you said, when we give space for people to feel that way, it goes a long way, because there is this distrust of the healthcare system, because no one really understands healthcare except for those who work in it. And we don't even understand it all.
Right, we don't.
And I'll give you an example. I had a family member who was recently in the emergency department. Mm-hmm. And the emergency department's role is to clear any life-threatening events, right? To make sure there's nothing life-threatening going on, that you're not going to die immediately, and that they can stabilize you if they need to stabilize mm-hmm. you. Their goal is not to get you back to 100%.
Right.
They're going to send you home to follow up your primary care or whatever you need to do on an outpatient once they make sure you don't have anything that's life-threatening
right.
or that needs immediate attention. Mm-hmm. Well, I went with this family member to the ED, and as someone who is not a healthcare professional, they didn't understand why they weren't admitted to the hospital or why they left the ED and they weren't pain-free.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
And I you know, took the opportunity to explain that part of the healthcare system. But I said all of that to say healthcare system is not easily understood. Mm-hmm. And so therefore there's this distrust of, are they really doing the right thing for me? Do they really care about me as a person? Oh, all they want is your money and all of this stuff. And when we can make people, going back to what you said, when we can make people feel seen and heard and understand what's going on, and they have some sort of choice or decision in that piece, that goes a long way.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I definitely agree. And even thinking about, I have worked in a more urgent psychiatric setting. And at that time, maybe I hadn't really grown into my profession quite yet. But I think if we could have, maybe even I'm thinking about myself, if I could have taken time again, a one-liner, because just what you just said, Brandy, that a lot of people don't understand the role of each maybe level of healthcare. And so taking a moment or a one-liner or two to say, you know, in this urgent care setting, you know, we do this, but you'll have to, the reason we want you to follow up is because it's not an emergency. It's not an immediate danger. It's not, you know, immediately life-threatening or things like that. I think even saying that can be helpful too.
Yeah. I mean, that's a huge point, right? Just explaining, because we assume that people should know. You showed up here, you should know what this is about.
Right.
But the difference between urgent care and the emergency department and a primary care visit and a specialist, there's so many pieces to our U.S. healthcare system that, you know, it's no wonder people don't know where to go and who to go to who for.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah. And how, and you know, what the expectation is when you're done with that person or that setting, so to speak.
Yeah, and how it all works together, right? There's a continuum of care, right? There is, each piece plays its part, and hopefully all the parts are talking to each other. That's a conversation for another day.
We're ready for a couple more hours about that one.
Yeah, I mean, but there are so many pieces, and they all carry their function in helping the person to get back to, you know, the quality of life that hopefully they're looking for. Mm-hmm. Well, awesome. Okay, so we talked about how people can connect with you. How can my network support you?
Oh, wow. That's such a great question. So nice. That's so nice as well. I think that as far, you know, as providing, you know, supporting me and my mission, if anyone in the network knows a nurse or nurse practitioner who's interested in psychiatric nurse practitioner, to send them my way. And it's not necessarily to purchase anything from me, but I just mean because of the tips and the practical steps that I do provide on social media, as well as through my newsletter. I think it can be helpful, because I know we talked a lot about, you know, my journey to becoming a psychiatric nurse practitioner, but I also know that once you do become one, there can be a loneliness with that. Some people don't know other nurse practitioners in their area or don't know them well. Sometimes, like for me, for example, there was in the area of Virginia that I was in, it was probably when I graduated in 2011, it was probably only about 5 of us, you know, and so there wasn't a lot. And so I didn't know where to kind of turn, where to like get support from, things like that. And so that's, of all the things that I do, that's really my continued main goal, is to provide that support that maybe people don't have. And like I said, it doesn't mean to buy anything from me at all. It just means, as far as providing these practical tips, providing steps, providing advisement on, you know, if you find this pain point in your career, because most of us find the same pain point in our career, then this is some things to, you know, think about and consider. Things like that. And so just send them my way. If there's anyone who needs support, who is a psychiatric mental health nurse practitioner, I would love to, you know, support them. I would love to continue to help their journey be less distressful as possible, because I know that it can be very distressing in the beginning.
Yeah. And, you know, we all need support. Mm-hmm. We all need to feel like we have someone in our corner cheering us on. So I will put the links to all the ways that people can find you in the show notes so they can go and find it there and click on that and connect with you. But this has been such a great conversation. I really appreciate you for taking the time to be on this podcast and for sharing your journey and all of these resources.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. Yes. Thank you for allowing me to share and just having a good conversation about some things I hadn't thought about in a while, which, you know, you talked about the healthcare system and the fact that most people who use the healthcare system don't have a full understanding in that. And so that just helps me to think about things a little bit better too. How can I do better at educating in the different settings, you know, that I work in? It's just being more mindful of that piece of things.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for listening to the show. It would mean a lot if you would share this episode with a friend or a colleague. I would be honored to encourage them in their journey too.